What's up, baddies? Welcome back to Bad Therapy. It has been a hot minute. We have been rehabilitating our podcast. And in that spirit, we'd like to welcome our first ever special guest.
Reno Gold.
Yay.
I was like, did you forget my name?
I think it's hard because we've known each other for so long. You've known since, like, I don't know, sixth grade. Probably.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm sure it's hard not to use my real
name. Absolutely. I'm like, welcome to Reno Gold.
Yeah.
We did take a very long needed break, but we didn't want to come back too soon because we wanted to make sure that we came back with a freaking bang. So that's what this podcast is. We might have mentioned previously that we wanted to start inviting guests on the pod. So we're really excited that you're here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. Those of you who don't know, get an Instagram. Extremely famous, extremely top performing content creator. OnlyFans, what, top 1%?
No, 0.01.
Oh, excuse me. He's like, bitch, don't get it twisted.
There's so many people in the top 1%. It accounts for, yeah.
That's not even special. Okay, top 0.001%. Yeah.
Basically, the cream of the crop, the gold of Reno.
We're here with the absolute cream of the crop. So, Reno Gold, tell us a little bit about how you got started in the industry, how we know each other. Just give us your backstory, warm up our viewers a little bit.
Hi, I'm Reno Gold, and I started in sex work when I was 18. I started working at a strip club in Rhode Island just on weekends. And
I love that it was Rhode Island, too.
Yeah, so I was living in Boston, and I would drive to Rhode Island on weekends and dance in a strip club. It was only a strip club, like, one night a week. It was super ratchet and ghetto, and they would turn what was normally the coat closet into the private room, and they would just drag one rusty metal chair in there, and they were like, this is where you'll be sucking dick. That was my introduction into the strip club.
They're like, welcome to the industry, kid.
Yeah, but I mean, for me, like, getting like $300 a night was like great.
Holy
for
shit.
Being in high school. I started off doing that, and then I started traveling to dance all over the country. So I would do 1 week New York, 1 week LA, 1 week Miami, and I basically lived out of hotel rooms, and I did that for years. And that's how I started my Instagram page, was to let my clients know when I'd be in town and what club I'd be dancing at. So that's how I built my Instagram and my whole following.
And just like a backstory, extremely talented gymnast, right? Like extremely flexible. Go check out the Instagram page. It's honestly
extremely flexible.
No.
Wait, I have a question. So did you grow your following before you started doing sex work, like OnlyFans, or was it like through dancing?
Oh yeah,
or?
It was before I did OnlyFans. Yeah. I was like, because it wasn't around at the time.
It wasn't really a thing. Yeah.
It's kind of cool because there's not many guys left like me, because nowadays everyone just goes right into OnlyFans, which I think is great if you can cut out the in-person work, because it's much more dangerous.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
I kind of experienced all of it like before social media got big for
You started from the
OnlyFans.
Bottom.
OnlyFans. Yeah.
Like,
so
OG.
I started it in the clubs, and then started webcamming too. And then when OnlyFans rolled around, it was really nice because like starting porn helped me actually settle down, which sounds crazy.
It's
but
like, why are you?
I was able to stay in one spot because before, the only people for years that I knew were my clients and other guys I danced with, and it was all about the hustle, just staying in hotel rooms. It was like a pretty lonely life.
In clubs every night, like up super late every night.
So
yeah,
your schedule is so fucked.
Yeah, like how are you supposed to meet somebody?
Then also it's hard because like if you want to be with someone, it's hard if you're doing like in-person work. Not a lot of people are comfortable with that.
So that like leads into a burning question that I have. How do you manage a romantic life outside of your line of work? Like, does that...
I'm still trying to figure it out.
Sure.
Still trying to figure it out. Well, actually, I was in a 5-year relationship and it was really, really nice. He knew me from the time I was dancing until OnlyFans. We grew so much together and it was amazing.
Did he do?
He was a doctor.
Okay.
Yeah. So he was in med school.
Okay. And he was supportive? Like, he understood the hustle or...
Yes and no. Yeah. I think it was really hard for him. It takes a lot of communication.
Yeah.
Like, how do you create boundaries? How do you have trust in a situation where it's like, he knows you're going to be with other people? Was that just something he kind of had to learn to accept, or what were the boundaries?
Yeah, just kind of had to like learn to accept. Well, I mean, at first it was, I wasn't allowed to do like collabs on OnlyFans or whatever. And then I went on a content trip and did one, which was like considered cheating, you know?
I mean, if they're not okay with it. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. So that was like a huge issue. And then we worked through it, and basically we just had like no rules after that. We would like fuck people if we were together, if we were separate, but it was all about honesty.
So did it turn into like an open relationship also allowed to have sex? Okay.
And I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, in your line of work, that's kind of a way to make it fair or a way to make it work for both people.
Yeah, totally. And also like if I'm in a relationship, I don't want you to hide anything from me. So like if you're feeling some type of way, I want you to be your own person. I don't want to like, you know what I mean? And I want to share our experiences together.
Yeah.
So like go be your own person, go have the sex you want to have. Like for me, sex really doesn't mean that much.
Yeah. Right. It's a job for you.
It's crazy because it used to not mean that much. And now lately it really does again.
Really?
Like, yeah. So I like don't have sex at all unless there's like an emotional connection. And
really? That is super interesting.
There's so many people that want to have sex with you, but they don't want the whole package. You know what
I mean? They don't care about who you are like, as a person.
Yeah, so they don't see you as like a potential partner at all. And I didn't see myself in that way for a long time, but now I'm just looking at myself differently and I have different values now. Like in my personal life, I don't have sex right off the bat because I can do that for work.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you how you separate your work sex from your relationship sex, but it sounds like you've kind of come to a point where your romantic partners, you're not just having sex.
Exactly.
Sex.
I'm not just having like fuck buddies.
Right.
I don't just have fuck buddies, but like for work, there's no emotional connection at all.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's the thing is like, I don't want that in my personal life because that's already my job is having a hookup.
100%.
So I'm not looking for just hookup, which is hard though, because people just see me as a hookup. Because
they probably think that you like to have sex.
That's what you do. And that's like what they're going to do with you.
Yeah. And I think unless you've been a sex worker, they don't really understand how you break it down into your brain. And it's just complete different categories.
How do you separate that emotional connection with work and reality? Because it's like, you know, sex is an intimate or could be an intimate thing. How do you keep the emotions out of work?
It's
not hard at all. I mean, there's a lot of stop and go. You're flexing the entire time. You're angling your body. You're worried about what you look like. You're not worried about
what's going on.
So it's not really like an actual enjoyable experience.
No, it is enjoyable. Like it's enjoyable, but it's just much different.
It is for performance.
It's performance. And I am an exhibitionist, so I do like people watching. So that is like an aspect for me, but it's more about me liking to be the center of attention than who I'm actually with and enjoying them.
What does that mean exactly? Exhibitionist?
So like, I like to show off and have like people watch.
Okay.
You're an exhibitionist.
Well, sounds like something. Okay, so is that in specifically in work or in your relationships as well?
I think I'm attention seeking in all aspects of my life.
That's so weird. Me too. Allie's like.
Yeah.
So navigating relationships in this career, have you felt like it's been hard to find non-toxic relationships or find like actual real connection outside of your work?
Well, I guess that's still something new to me because I was in a relationship for most of my
career.
Yeah. I don't know. Right now, I'm just like not looking really. Like I'm happy by myself. And if someone can come and compliment my life, I'm totally down for that. But yeah, I don't know. It's not something I'm super seeking. Yeah. But like I haven't really had too much of an issue. I don't know. I think I'm pretty like persistent. So if a guy doesn't view me a certain way, like we'll keep talking. And after a certain point, they do.
Yeah.
So I have been like really lucky in that way where I've been able to break them down.
Yeah. until they date me. Well, that's it. It's like they have to get to know you.
Yeah.
They have to like learn who you actually are.
Yeah. Right now, I just like, I need to be happy by myself because we really go through this life alone. And if someone compliments that, it's amazing.
Yeah. But someone should add something to your life.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Instead of just join in.
Yeah, or like when you mesh your lives too quickly. Because me and my ex, we weren't separate people. We both had like a meshed identity. And I think that's just too much pressure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And not to mention, it's hard to obtain a sense of self when you are a one unit with your partner. Like you kind of lose your identity and your individuality in a sense.
Yeah, totally. And I've always been someone up until recently who thought someone would come in and like fix all the broken pieces.
Yeah.
And now I've realized that's way too much pressure on the other person. It's really not fair. You should have a partnership, not like a therapist where you just dump on somebody.
Yeah.
That's why I've really started working on myself because I realized in my past relationships, I would lean like way too much on the other person.
Yeah.
And it wasn't fair.
And that's huge of you to say that because I think that that's like a common theme in a lot of relationships. Like you're not happy and then someone comes along and makes you happy. And so you think that that's going to be the fix of it, but then you realize that there's actually so many underlying things within yourself that someone else can't change for you. I think a lot of people sometimes aren't self-aware enough, or maybe they just don't want to look at themselves in that way and like say, this is what I need to work on in order to be a good partner.
It's hard because when you're in that mindset, that's how you attract people who are like fixers or toxic, controlling, manipulative. I think when you're in that mindset with relationships, you attract the wrong type of people anyway. Yeah. So now you're kind of coming to a place where you're not going to change who you are for anyone. You've built this incredibly successful career. And if someone doesn't compliment that and see you who for who you really are, which we should have done this at the beginning of the pod, but like we go way back. Yeah. I've known you for so long and you've always been just such a light, such a seriously funny, kind, energetic, just genuine person. And I can imagine that it would be hard for people to see that when they're not actually interested in getting to know you. They just see the online persona.
Yeah, or they're interested in the physical aspect, but they're like, God, I could never date him.
Has that ever made you want to get out of the industry, or have you always been comfortable?
No, there's like, I don't know what else I would do. I have zero job history. Also,
his resume says. You just like goes to apply at Home Depot and they're like.
I worked at a strip club, gave lap dances in a closet.
No, but it really hasn't. This is what I like to do and it gives me a creative outlet. It's just a part of who I am at this point.
So I have a question, like going all the way back to when you first got into it, was this something that you always felt very like you were a very sexual being and you were very comfortable with that? Because like for me, I'm very shy and very like, not with like the right person, but like Madison's very much the opposite where she's
confident, outgoing.
Yeah, like she's more comfortable with that aspect of things. My question is like, when you first started, was it hard for you to feel comfortable like giving lap dances and like sucking dick in the closet, or was it just
It was like super natural and easy. I didn't have any hangups at all.
Kind of just like slid into.
So that's just like what you were meant to do.
I don't know. It's kind of crazy because like the moment I stepped into a club, I kind of feel like I had this, I kind of knew how to work it. I just kind of like built like a persona almost in the club. So it was just like, I felt very confident. You know what I mean? Which I may 100%. Not be confident in my day-to-day life, but like when I step into the club or in front of the camera, like you have to be.
It's a new, like it's a different side of you. Mm-hmm. And I think that honestly is probably part of the reason why up until you are in the place that you're now, it's difficult for relationships because you have this persona that everyone sees. That's who they think that you are.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they meet you and they're like, whoa.
Oh, you're not a dick.
You're a real person. Yeah.
I have another question on that because you say like you've kind of had this like, you know, new view on sex within your personal life. Mm-hmm. When you're having sex with like your partners and you say, you know, when you're having sex for work, you have this persona that you put on, you get into character and it's like, it's a performance. Is it easy for you to disconnect from the performer side of you when you're having sex with like a partner that you have emotions for?
For a long time, that was an issue for me when I was going from escorting to being in a relationship because I was working so much. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
you're just like turned into the character.
Yeah. So for a while, like when I was having sex, it was definitely like just like switched modes. I wasn't completely present.
Like you, yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't completely present, but I mean, I don't do that at all anymore.
Yeah.
And when I do have sex now, I'm so present. Like literally it's so bad because I like cannot last anymore. Cause I like, I cut out, like I don't watch porn at all.
Yeah. That's ironic.
Which is funny.
Yeah. I don't watch porn at all. I hadn't had sex in 6 months until recently.
So you were taking a break to work on yourself and get to a place where you could separate those feelings.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why don't you watch porn?
So the reason I don't watch porn is just because I make it and I'm doing it like once a week.
Is it
so.
Kind of like when you're watching like, you know, like when you're watching a movie and you know, like you're an actor and you can just like see the acting
I think
and
that
it's not.
The angles like desensitize you because like you don't have like whole pounding POV. You know what I mean? I just didn't want to be desensitized and I realized that I was starting to have to use it for work to get hard and I was like, I don't like this. And now it's like, it's really insane because my sex life has completely changed. Yeah.
What do you think sparked that change? The difference with your sex life, why you took 6 months off, why?
I think it's because before I would just have sex with like everybody, you know, so I wanted people to like me or I figured like, this is my place.
This is what I do.
Yeah. So like,
this
I just
what I'm
like,
good at.
Yeah, exactly. So I just kind of felt like this is what makes me fun, whatever. But like now I've started taking myself a little bit more seriously. I think I bring a lot more to the table than
your self-worth is not just in your sex
life. I
was going
to say that's so deep and probably like such a hard thing to come to terms with, thinking that that is what makes you like likable to other people. You know?
Well,
like,
and it's so, so relatable more. Because I mean, I think we all have parts of ourselves. I had very similar issues with alcohol. Like I felt like I couldn't be myself or be fun or be likable without getting like absolutely annihilated. And it took me the longest time to realize, okay, that's actually not the best version of you at all. Yeah. That's just where you're comfortable. Totally. So, and I'm sure a lot of people in your industry struggle with that because all of your validation, your money, your persona, all of it comes from sex.
Right.
So to separate that, I mean, I feel like at some point you have to go through that if you want to live a normal life outside of the industry.
I can totally relate to what you just said about alcohol because you almost take it on as a personality trait. Like, oh, I'm the fucked up fun one. Like,
absolutely.
I'm the hot mess. Mm-hmm. And that's how I viewed myself. I was like, I'm the hot mess. I'm like the fun.
The party animal.
Yeah, party animal. And those aren't personality traits.
No, those are shocking. Like,
yeah, they're really not.
Those are quite literally toxic traits.
Yeah, and you're not as fun as you think you are. A lot of people are like, that's sad.
Yeah, no, it's actually kind of sad.
And then
yeah.
you wake up the next day and you feel embarrassed and you're like, what the fuck did I do? You're overthinking everything. But then when it comes around again, you're like, you just do it again.
Well, and then because it becomes habitual, right? And then you get to a place where you're not comfortable without it. And it took for me understanding how actually embarrassing I was. And for a while it worked, you know, when you're 20, 21, okay, it's kind of cute. 25 comes along, it's not as cute. Then you're like 27 and people are like, is she fucking good? Yeah. And it took me realizing that I was not actually being my authentic self when I was acting like that. And nobody knew who I actually was. Everyone liked me, I was funny, whatever, but it wasn't me. And that made me hate myself.
You probably didn't know who you were even
at all, in the slightest. Not like I'm like so healed and sober and fucking have my shit together now, but I can go to a party without blacking out. So
yeah,
hey, it's
I've
a
been
win.
Going to parties completely sober.
That's like my worst nightmare.
I don't use like anything at all anymore. And it's great because I have fun while I'm having fun. I don't stay places craving the next thing. So like, as soon as I'm not having fun, I'm out.
You're ready. You're done.
I'm in bed. Like New Year's, I went out, went to a beautiful party. By 11:30, I was like, I'm not feeling it anymore. I don't have to wait till midnight.
It is when you're not chasing the next high. You know that one girl that just never knows when the party's over?
No, like, I don't know her.
The afters after the afters. Yeah. And then it's just like noon. It's some guy's like gross apartment and you're just like,
you look around.
The birds are chirping. You're like,
you don't know a single person. You're like, oh shit. Yeah. But what's next?
Yeah.
Never heard of her. I don't know her.
You just don't want it to end because you know that the ending is going to be miserable.
Let's pray
and
for
traumatic.
Her.
Yeah, we literally have all been her at one point. We're like, never heard of her. Well, and that's, I think that comes a lot with maturing and realizing that you can't live the rest of your life that way. Like life is going to go on. If you don't change your habits and change your behavior, you're going to be in the same spot when you're fucking 50.
I mean, I used to bartend and I was younger when I got into it. I think I was like 21 and I got out of it around 23. But I remember being around everyone that I worked with was like in their 30s plus.
Yeah.
And all they did was do coke and drink and go out all night. Yeah. And like, I'm not judging anybody's lifestyle, but I remember thinking like, I was like getting older. I was like,
stop.
When are you too old for this? Like, is this like what I want to be doing for the rest of my life? Or is it time to, cause I was like, oh, I'm just 23. And then I was like, well, I'm just 24.
Yeah, I know. Like time goes by.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's okay when you're in college.
It's scary. It's like flying by.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. And I'm sure in your industry, the party scene is probably pretty prevalent.
I mean, like you say though, like it's everywhere. If you're a bartender, I think it's like no more than any other industry. Just maybe you have like less responsibilities or I don't know. Cause I think it attracts a certain type of person who's open to many things that go against social norms.
Yeah. So absolutely.
Or like, I think LA is a big scene where it's a lot of influencers and people that do jobs that you.
So easy to stay sober in LA.
I feel like in our area, Reno,
there's not a lot going on.
You know, if you're not drinking, people are like, what happened? Yeah. Like, are you okay? I'm like, no, not really, actually.
Do you remember? Every morning in homeroom, we had to watch a Crystal Darkness video because there was a meth problem.
100%.
And they were like, you want to do meth, kid? Here's your meth face. And here's your meth baby and your meth boyfriends. And
literally in middle school.
Every single homeroom.
This was our criteria. Like, welcome to Reno.
Is it really a problem here?
I would say that definitely small town vibes, but with like medium city energy.
Yeah.
There's like not a lot to do, but there's enough to do to get yourself in trouble. trouble.
Well, because all the casinos.
And it's a 24-hour town, so it's like, yeah. You can, the birds are chirping, you're like, keep on chirping, I don't care. Yeah. Like, it is easier here to get in trouble, for sure. But obviously, it's the people that you surround yourself with, so.
Talking to people that grew up in other cities and other states and stuff, and then talking about my high school and middle school experience, I think, like, drugs and alcohol in the party scene was so, like, prevalent.
Normalized.
And normal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you talk to someone that's from somewhere else, and they're like, what, you did what in the eighth grade?
Or just, like, breaking into people's cars was normal. Yeah.
People would bring guns to high school parties. And
yes, that or like, tase that each thing? Other.
Yeah. Absolutely. Why is there a gun here? I'm 12 years old.
Absolutely, and it was mm-hmm. so normalized. Even talking to people who lived in Vegas, which you think of Vegas, like the party city, they're like, mm-hmm. are you guys okay?
Yeah.
I think there's a lack of supervision, too, because it's like a working class city. So like everyone's parents, like both parents
working
are working.
15-hour days.
Or they're single parents.
Yeah. You know? I mean, definitely, I grew up with not a lot of supervision. And that actually leads into my next question. Your parents were relatively strict, right? I mean, as far as I can remember, they had...
I mean, when I would go to a friend's house, I had to call them from their home phone.
Like, to verify.
To verify that there was, like, a parent there, too.
They were, like, kind of, you know, on your ass a little bit, which wasn't a bad thing. But when you got into the industry, was that an issue with your family life? Were they accepting of you? How did you kind of present that to them?
I think at that point, they were concerned because I wasn't really thriving in life.
Yeah.
I was definitely seeking community, I guess. So they weren't happy with it at first. But then, I mean, once I started making a lot of money, they were really supportive. They helped me invest it. We work together now. I hired my mom as the property manager for my condo.
That is so cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's been really amazing. And I mean, it was hard for them at first. And I still think it's hard.
To some degree.
Probably, yeah.
Probably worry about you and like how you're perceived and like just like being a parent.
I asked my dad one time, I was like, how do you feel about like when I started dancing? He's like, I feel the same way I would feel like if one of my daughters started dancing. He was like, honestly, I was just like heartbroken.
Yeah. But, and concerned. Yeah.
And concerned. Yeah. But I mean, they're really proud of me. My dad came to my house like when I was dancing, just like living out of hotel rooms. I had $60,000 in my closet. And I was like, cash. I don't know what to do with it.
He's like, no. He's like, well,
but what do I do with it?
I paid taxes on all of it.
looks at the camera. Every penny. Yeah.
Every penny. Once they started realizing I was making money and started doing well and getting properties, relatively, like, for what I've made, I've been really conservative with how I spend.
That kind of leads into my next question is, what does the future look like for you? I mean, obviously, you want to stay in the industry. You're happy now, but 50, 60 years old, what do you want to do with your life?
Me and my dad are gonna flip a house, so
I love
that. My next project, I would just like to continue doing real estate, traveling, and do more lifestyle and fashion content as well. I'm always gonna do OnlyFans. People are gonna be begging me to stop fapping it at 80.
You'd be like, please, Reno, it's enough.
Like, your balls are hitting your ankles.
No, you'll still have an obsessive following,
but
I'm certain.
Yeah, I just want to continue down this road and just keep making things that I'm really proud of, because for a while there, I kind of lost the creative side, and I felt like I was just doing so much physically and wasn't really putting my personality and heart into the work. And now, like, I'm still doing all the same stuff, like all the blowjobs, all of that, but I've added an element of something that I'm really proud of, which is like aesthetic.
When you say you want to do more like lifestyle and kind of branch off with your content, because you have a giant following and people that obviously follow you for, you know, you could say it's for you, for sex, for whatever. When you say like different types of content, what do you mean by that? Like, okay. What kind of,
So I used to do YouTube. I would do a new video every single week, long format. So I want to get back
like
to doing that.
Vlogs. Or,
So I would do vlogs and they would do really well.
You have the personality for it, for sure.
Thanks.
So it's like,
And they would do really well. So I want to get back into that because I had stopped showing my personality for a long time on socials. And I just have so much more going on in my life now that I'm not partying, and I have so much
more to show.
That you can focus on it.
And I'm just kind of like, I'm still doing hardcore, still doing all of that. I still sexed with all of my fans. It takes me so long.
I'm like, how can you possibly?
The hustle is real.
I have a lot of subs and like it takes hours a day.
You don't have like an assistant? Like, you have to do that yourself? Or is this
They're paying to talk to you.
I
literally know them by name. Okay. Like, it's guys who have been subscribed to me for like 6 years. Yeah. I know what's going on in their life. Some of them have battled with cancer. We've talked through it. Like, there's people.
It's a personal connection. Them. Yeah.
Absolutely.
What about the people that, because like, I think Madison might have mentioned something about this, but the people that think they know you like personally when they don't, like, do you have any stalkers? Can we talk about that?
I've never had like a full on stalker or anything, but I've had some like weird experiences. I was at a bar with my friend and this guy sat next to me and he asked what my name was and we just started talking because I'll talk to anyone. And then he just started being like, I love when you suck dick like this in your video.
Okay, so he knew you.
Like, do you want to suck my dick? Blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, I don't want to talk about that.
No, I'm a person.
And then he just like wouldn't stop. So I told my friend, I was like, hey, I'm going to go to the bathroom. So I went to the bathroom and I didn't notice that he followed me.
Oh my God.
And then my friend noticed. And when I got into the bathroom, I went into a stall. And when I went to shut it, he stopped and came at me.
Oh my God.
And my friend was like, hey, get out! Like screaming in the bathroom and like it deterred him.
Thank God.
So, yeah, that was weird.
Scary.
The problem with that has got to be people feel so comfortable with you because they see so much of you every day. There's probably people who are obsessively.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like people that think they know you like personally.
And you're like, I don't know you. Yeah. I feel like that's got to be tough. Like staying safe in your industry because there's fucked up people out there.
I've had great experiences doing what I do and I've had really horrible experiences. And I think when you're a sex worker, a bad day on the job can be devastating when it's something as intimate as sex.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. I mean, someone could really hurt you physically, mentally, rob you. And it's just like a situation where there's not an HR department. Yeah. Like who the fuck?
Yeah. And you're not going to call the police.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
I mean, can you call the police?
No.
Like.
No.
Yeah, you can't really. Right?
Why would you call the police? Because you're doing something illegal.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Like,
is it technically illegal?
What I was doing, yeah.
Well, I guess escorting is technically illegal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what are you going to say? Like,
yeah, and also they're not going to care. It's going to be embarrassing. Like, OnlyFans saved my life. It saved my life, my mental health, everything. Because you don't realize that when you're going into a hotel room and you don't know what the person looks like, what the situation's going to be, you never know what's going to go down. And you have to fight every instinct of fight or flight
that's
in you. And you become so desensitized to being in dangerous situations that you don't even realize when you're being treated poorly.
Yeah.
So I was just so used to being treated poorly that like it didn't phase me. And then I would take that into my everyday life, but it did phase me. I didn't think it did, but it did.
Disconnected and it, from that.
Yeah, it was just disconnected and it gave me, you know, low self-esteem. And I think that's why I was like, oh, I'm just here to like be the fun one, whatever. But I'm actually, I have so much more to me than that. So
that is so amazing that you were able to figure that out. Because I think that one of the stigmas of sex work is that people are never able to find their sense of self. And they lose themselves to that completely.
Well, and also you have to be a chameleon and adaptable to keep yourself
afloat. Like,
to do
the job.
Yeah, exactly.
Quite literally,
I've had it amazing, guys. You know what I mean?
Right.
But also it attracts a lot of narcissists. And narcissism normally stems. I've learned all of this like afterwards because like for me, I have to know why people do bad things and understand them and have compassion for them.
Right.
So I can forgive and move on. And narcissism normally stems from a deep insecurity. So maybe they've just been shoved down their entire life. So they have to be the one to root themselves up.
Do the shoving.
Want to feel powerful. Yeah. So I've really read a lot about psychology and just tried to figure out why people do what they do and have compassion and love for people who have treated me poorly.
I think that that's the main thing when you're dealing with people that are treating you bad and that have bad intentions is like being able to view them as like you feel for them and you understand them. That's why I also like I wanted to go into psychology for college and I wanted to be a clinical therapist because I wanted to understand the mind of people like that and why we do the things we do.
And if I'm gonna blame them and live in that victim role, I'm only gonna keep myself sick and I can't afford to do that. Yeah. So because like when you make yourself a victim, I threw myself a pity party for a long time and it got me nothing.
The only one that gets hurt in that situation is you.
Exactly.
People that can't take accountability for their own shit and like why things play out the way they do over and over and over again. Like we all know somebody that has the same shit happen to them, but yet they're never the problem. It's like, when do you look in the mirror and kind of self-assess?
Why am I even in this situation?
Why am I in this situation? You know what I mean? I was like, what brought me to the point where I was comfortable being treated this way?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Constantly.
Yeah. And I don't have time to hate because
it doesn't do anything for you. I get it. I do have a question. Have you ever gone to do a job like to someone's hotel room or like to do some sex work for somebody that is kind of like closeted, they're not openly gay, but they're just like,
yeah.
But have they like treated you poorly for that? Like, no. Had like, you've had like,
I've never been like hate crime.
Well, because I was thinking like the thought process behind this was like somebody self-hate. That's not comfortable with themselves, yeah. then like mm-hmm. seeking out like, okay, like I'm gonna have sex with you, but then like kind of taking it out on you.
Luckily, I haven't had that experience. I think they've been like really grateful when I do let them experience that part of themselves, because some of these guys, they never got to have those romantic relationships when they were young. So
right.
I think it's great that I can give them the opportunity to hook up with someone they're like attracted to that they didn't get the chance to because of the time that they were
living through. Yeah,
absolutely. And the level of confidentiality that you provide probably gives them the comfort. Yeah. They don't feel like they have to cause absolutely. A problem.
Now, like, I don't do escorting at all.
At all. Okay.
At all. So I just do OnlyFans, but I'm able to still give that experience. And I do like Skype shows and stuff. So I have guys that I'm talking to a lot who, you know, like they have been in the closet so long that they got past the point where they're attracted to the guys.
Yeah.
And the dating pool is just hard at that point because they've been in the closet. They've had the family. Yeah. So then how do you go into a fully gay lifestyle?
Absolutely.
So I think I'm like the nice balance. And we can just be buddies, but also like share intimate moments that are really special. So
where they feel like they're getting a little bit of themselves back, but they don't have to change their entire life after 50 years.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's intimidating. And also like, why put yourself through that? You know, like I'll keep a secret. I'll be your friend.
It's
I'll
okay.
be
your confidant. Yeah.
So kind of circling back to the relationship topics with this job, you say that you talk to a lot of men, they're paying you to talk to them and you know a lot about their lives and you talk to them often. Is that something that interferes in romantic relationships because people think that they have some sort of relationship with you? Like you're forming more of an emotional connection?
I don't think so. I think that aspect most guys can like wrap their mind around because I do explain like
they're paying you.
Like it is, even though they're paying you, you do actually form these bonds like with them. Like it's like impossible not to.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's like virtual. So I don't think it's as intimidating.
There's a boundary there. Partners. Yeah. It's not like you're like going to lunch with these guys or like having actual relationships.
Right, exactly.
It's all through a virtual platform.
Yeah.
And it's a part of your job and who you are. And I also feel like it kind of sets you apart that you spend so much time doing that because it's probably pretty easy to just put content out, but to actually form connections and bonds with people, it's probably why you have such a solid, like dedicated following.
That's the only reason I've had it going this long is because I've connected with
the people that support you.
Talking to the fans like helps ground me because for a long time I felt like I was caught up on how I would be remembered or things that weren't important. Like I need to build an empire, need to do all these things, but now I really believe that the only thing we leave behind when we die is the way that we treated other people and how that ripples throughout humanity and how future humanity will treat others. It makes me feel like I'm doing something when I do add value to other people's lives. So
it makes like your job and what you do worth it.
Absolutely. Because for a while I was like always pushing to get like the next step, all these things. And now I just realized that like connection and giving back is really what's important. You know?
And I can see how your line of work really probably does touch a lot of people, as crazy as that sounds, because you're
she touches a lot of people. You're not fucking wrong.
No pun fucking intended, but period. Yeah, no, I can see that because there's like a lot of people that probably are just looking for connection at the end of the day, and you provide that for people.
And humans need that because if we don't have connection, we're going to hurt ourselves or hurt those around us because we're not happy with our life. Everyone needs connection, and some people don't have the tools in their toolbox to have those connections. Or just circumstances in their life, they weren't able to make those bonds because of outside factors. Has nothing to do with them. It doesn't make something wrong with them. But like, I love being able to be there for people.
Well, and I think that's so important, especially in your line of work, because a lot of people's perception of sex workers is that they don't add to any value. There's people that get so angry and so hateful about it. And I see all these Instagram comments like, for the Bop House. I don't know if you know what the Bop House is.
Yeah, but
like fatherless behavior. And like people are just angry. But sex workers are human beings, people. I think the point of this podcast and what we wanted to bring attention to is that what you do adds a lot of value to a lot of people's life. There's probably people whose lives you've saved, people who you've made feel so important, so understood, and so valued. And I think that it's important for people to change their perception of sex work because there's probably so many people who really respect what you do.
And we all deserve to be heard. So
absolutely.
I think sex workers bring that to the table.
What would your advice be for somebody who's in sex work and was kind of in the place where you were in, where you felt like you'd lost yourself or you lost the value and you kind of were just putting on a show, a persona, and you kind of lost that humanity in it. What would you tell someone who wanted to get out of that and get into a more healthy mindset with it?
I think surround yourself with people who like you for you and you're not using each other to social climb, because when you are in sex work, it's very tempting to just go to the cooler thing, like all of that, but none of it really matters. Just being around people that make you feel good, even if they're not going to elevate you. You know what I mean? Like just having real people to ground you and having friendships outside of the industry. Like you need to have a completely separate life outside of the industry.
Like a real support system.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for someone like me, for a long time, it was really difficult because when it was working in clubs and stuff, you can't talk to anybody about that because people don't understand. So it was very isolating. Yeah. So then that was the issue for me. And I think some people, if their families are really religious, stuff like that, they're probably in the same situation. But you need to find your group of people outside of the industry to support you and who understand you, even if they don't completely get what you're going through, just being able to listen without judgment.
And care about you and respect you for who you are.
Yeah. And not your holes.
Not just your holes. I'm sure they respect your holes too. So in regards to holes, okay. We're going to get it done and dirty. What does your day-to-day life look like with OnlyFans? What do you film? Who do you film it with? How do you choose who you're going to film it with? Like break that down for us.
So I normally set up 2 shoots a week, independent. That'll be solo or with another model. It just depends. I book locations. I book a photographer. I do all the editing myself.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, I edit 200 still photos today.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yikes.
That's insane. That's
yeah. Lot, so yeah. I do a lot of editing. But so it just really depends day to day. Lately, I've been trying to just shoot at places that make me happy. So I've been doing a lot of hikes and shooting out on the mountain with people that I love hanging out with and would hang out with if we weren't filming.
Do you ever get any rogue hikers that walk up on your little scene that you're shooting?
Yeah. And like, the thing is, like, I'm very respectful. I never want to make anyone uncomfortable. Right. So like when there has been close calls, it just makes me want to curl up and die. So yeah.
No, yeah. I don't like subject anyone to that when they didn't want.
No,
like,
exactly. Yeah. Like I'm really careful about that because it's like would not be fair for someone to be like.
They're like, wow. Or they're like, damn, just, free subscription. Yeah.
Like, so you turn around, they're just like, there's an audience.
Yeah. So yeah, it just depends on day to day, but always hit the gym.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna say your body is like quite literally insane. How do you upkeep that? Is it hard? So, or I know you were a gymnast, so I know you probably have like
I still do gymnastics. Okay. This is what it would be like before I got injured. 3 days a week, I would go to gymnastics and I would tumble for 3 hours each session.
Holy shit.
And then every morning I would go to the gym for 2 hours, lift weights. And then at nighttime I would go back to the gym and do stretching. And I would like answer messages and stuff like while I was doing those things. It was a bit like excessive and I'm kind of going a little insane now that I can't use my body the way that I would like to right now. But fitness is a huge thing for me. Like I need to burn myself out or else I start overthinking.
Pants up. Yeah.
I feel like you guys have that in common.
Absolutely. Like I'm like, I have to.
Maddie is a warrior in the gym. I have to fucking get in there.
Otherwise, I'm the same way. I'm like, I get just weird, crazy, like my emotions get out of control.
Yeah.
But also for you, it's a big part of your job to look the way you look.
Perfect at every angle.
Like,
and I genuinely just really enjoy it. There's a huge gymnast community out where I live. So like in Santa Monica, every Sunday, there's a gymnast meetup on the beach.
That is so cool.
People teach each other acro yoga. So you're like lifting each other up. I also do silks, which is the curtains that like they do in Circus Soleil.
Yeah.
I'm not good. But then I'm good at lira, which is the hula hoop that hangs. And then my main thing is pole.
Obviously. Like it makes sense.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I've tried before. And
it's like impossible. Like,
I know. It's so hard.
I can't even hold myself up.
Oh my God. Like learning new skills is so painful on pole because like until you learn how to hit that grip perfectly, you're getting fucked.
Your skin.
Yeah.
Like, it gets like ripped off.
Oh, yeah.
Like
yeah.
Kudos to my dancing sisters and brothers because I did one like polga class and I had like no skin left on the inside of my legs. I was like, this is fucking terrible.
You have to keep it up. So you actually have to condition your skin.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Feel like a little bit of a callus or.
I don't know what it is, but your skin adapts. I think it's mostly about you like hitting at the exact angle you need. And then it stops like you from slipping because the slipping
is what causes it. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that makes sense. I mean, you have to look good, feel good to perform well in your career. Mm-hmm. When you do sets, is it, you know, obviously when I think of porn, I think of like the little schoolgirl and it's like a planned out scene. How do you plan what your scenes are going to look like? Or is it organic?
So I used to do that. I had, when I was living in Florida, I had a studio that would build whatever set I wanted.
Love that.
It was amazing. So they made a classroom for me. They done locker room, bunch of different stuff. And I would write the script of everything I would say and all the camera angles I wanted. So I would write out the camera angles I wanted so that way I could direct while I was also in front of the camera.
Wow. I love that. So you're very in control of what your sets look like.
Oh, yeah. It's all me. It's all me. But I now I don't really do like as many script did things. It's more of like vlogs, like come hiking with me. And
yeah. A little bit more organic.
It's more organic. Yeah.
Did you have a background in like video or anything like that? Or did you just knew what your angles were?
No, I just kind of like have
like
a
trial
big,
and error. And,
yeah. Just yeah. trial and error. And also I just have like an imagination. So
creative.
Like, think about like, oh, this is because at one time I played a doctor and the patient. So I did camera angles
at the same time.
Yes. Yeah. So
were the patient for yourself.
Yes. And I was also the doctor. So it's like the camera angles were super strategic and like I had to shoot everything all at once in one look and then
really
go
creative.
Back and do the other side of the script like in another look. And I really enjoyed planning that out.
I'm like, okay. I'm tempted. I've always been tempted to like subscribe to your OnlyFans. So I'm just like curious about like curious about what your asshole looks like.
It's pink.
Speaking of, I actually know because you have a flesh deck. Is that what it's called?
Flesh jack.
Okay. So just for the people who don't know what a flesh jack is, it's basically an exact replica of your asshole and your dick, correct? Mm-hmm. How did they build that?
So for the asshole, they actually gave me a full prostate exam to get the texture right.
That's insane.
I'm just kidding.
Oh my God. I was like,
someone was just like poking around in there.
No, but actually, so they don't do molds anymore. They do video mapping and it's even better. So the guy who was doing it, I was like, do you just like scan buttholes all day? He's like, no, I actually just won an award on the Fast and the Furious, but I do this on the side.
This is my side job?
Yeah, so I was like, I'm sorry, I'm on all fours. They're video mapping my asshole for 20 minutes. There's 10 people in the room.
Oh my God.
And we're all just like laughing and talking and they got the wrinkles right. You know what I mean? They got
like, it is what it should be. It's honestly impressive.
Yeah, like on my webcam show, I'll like show it. It's like, it's an exact replica. It's crazy.
I mean, you have to be pretty secure in yourself to be comfortable with all that. Cause like, I personally, I don't feel good enough about myself to be on all fours. I'd be like, don't look at me. Like,
you don't feel good about your butthole.
I'm so sorry. Doesn't look like yours. It's kind of fucked up.
I was just afraid my mold was going to be bigger than everyone else's.
Yeah, that actually looks pretty good. I mean, actually, in regards to that, is there like conditioning? Do you have to like do Kegels? Like,
I actually do Kegels.
I mean, like it's a real thing. You get it back.
I do Kegels. Yeah, literally. No, okay. I actually do. Yeah.
I mean, you think about it, it's like, it's muscle conditioning.
Yeah.
For men, when you do like the Kegels, it also makes your taint bigger. Like the actual where.
Like the muscle grows?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay, so does it get like longer or thicker?
It helps you actually have longer erections and harder erections.
Oh, wow.
It really does.
Did you hear that?
Yeah. Fun fact for all of our male listeners out there, if you're still sticking around.
Do your Kegels.
Do your fucking Kegels.
Your butthole Kegels.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Where are we going from here? Perfect. Okay, good.
Okay, good. Okay, so I've heard that girls can have their boyfriend's dicks, or boys can have their boyfriend's dicks molded into like a dildo.
That's literally what he has.
So, but like, you didn't have to have. So how did they
fucking thousands of them?
But so they did like they did it digitally.
They did it digitally. So they put like these stickers and then video map, and it's an exact replica of the veins on the dick, everything.
Okay. That's insane.
So how did they used to do it? Did they put you in paper mache?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Even your butthole. How do they mold a butthole?
I don't know.
Okay.
Thankfully, he didn't have to deal with that. Okay. Yeah.
Could you imagine?
I mean, you seen like when they do like the paper mache mold. Like, it's like, that's honestly kind of what I was envisioning. Yeah. So
I was envisioning like them pouring, like, you know, when you stick your hand in that wax thing and then like you pull it out, I was thinking.
The numbers that they're doing they're like multi-millions.
I mean, they've cornered the market. It's like a niche market.
Yeah. I could see it.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure, you know, if you have a loyal following, that is probably a huge perk for them to be able to just go buy your dick, basically. Yeah.
100%.
And like, then they can probably watch you and feel like they're.
Yeah.
Aww, how sweet.
Yeah, it's fun for like my live shows too, because I get to fuck myself.
You're like, oh, so this is what it feels
like. I love going live.
You're like, I'm the center of attention.
Yeah. I love going live on my OnlyFans. It's like my goal to go twice a month now. So it's so fun.
What is it? It's like a live, like Instagram live?
How many?
Yeah, it's like an Instagram live, but it's like way dirtier.
How many viewers do you get on like one live, or does it tell you?
I get quite a bit. Yeah.
Do you get paid extra for that? Do the people have to pay to watch it?
Well, I mean, they tip if they want to see certain things, and we're just like talking and I go on for a long time. So yeah, people tip. It's yeah, it's good.
That's cool.
It's good.
I mean, it's just an extra.
But it's also just a nice way to connect too, and also play like fun little sexy games and stuff. And I do like strip shows, and just that's it gets my exhibition like side
absolutely
satisfied.
And the creative side. It's like you're constantly thinking of like new content.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's gotta be a part of it. It's you don't want to get stagnant. You don't want to get boring. You want people to get what they're paying for. So
yeah. And I think like the key to that is just you being stimulated and having fun with what you do, you know, and for me, that's been hikes in nature lately.
Yeah. So. You have to enjoy it. Otherwise it becomes a problem.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I'm sure
it becomes
people,
a chore.
Yeah.
And like the great thing about this career is like I went into it cause I didn't want work to feel like a chore. I wanted it to be on my terms. And you just have to remember that you're the boss and you get to decide what type of day you're gonna have.
Your terms, your schedule.
Mm-hmm. And now I always choose to have a fun one. So.
You'll never work a 9-to-5 in your life. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, like OnlyFans, the way like the amount of messaging and
like it is a 9-to-5.
It is a 9-to-5 because also the editing.
But you're not working for like some corporate fucking
right,
people that
don't
give a shit about you.
Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like you don't have to call in sick. Like if you need a day, you can take it.
Yeah.
But
that's
true. You're an entrepreneur, self-made, like that's really what it comes down
to. It's respectable. I think it's fucking awesome. Like you said you were like focused on building this empire and then you took a step back. But like you have built an empire, which is really cool.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean 600,000 followers on Instagram, millions on X, Twitter.
Almost at a million.
Almost. I'm like 10 million.
Like, so you chill the fuck billion. Out.
And you'd say that X is your probably biggest platform. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is? Because it's not censored?
Yeah, totally. You can post whatever you want. So for a long time, I was posting like full on like previews to my videos, me like sucking dick and stuff like that. And
on Twitter?
Yeah, they would get like multi-million views on like the posts. Now I don't show as much on Twitter because I'm like, I already got it out there that people know I do hardcore. So like if you see me posting a picture with a guy, they just already know that it's going to be hardcore. Yeah. So I don't need to put myself out there like that to try to get more followers because I'm bringing in a lot of new subscribers every month.
Don't get free content. You gotta come get it.
100%. Right, exactly. So I've been trying to, my Instagram, I'm like making it a little bit like more focused on outfits and not so sexy because my account almost got deleted. So I've been trying to change and like leave this
more up for like,
yeah.
Imagination.
Well, and so
like,
you don't
come
get
subscribe.
Banned. Just, yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
Well, it's weird because why is X so unfiltered compared to any other social?
Well, they
want to
have freedom of speech.
Yeah.
And
okay.
Yeah.
I respect
that. I mean, you have to like put in a birthday and like verify how old you are to be able to see things like that,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And, but like, honestly, it should be that way. I don't think that things should be so censored. I mean, you can't post a butt cheek on Instagram or TikTok anymore.
I think it's also for like advertisers. You have to be advertiser friendly to be monetized on YouTube. So like if you're showing content that shows like visible dick line, like companies don't want to be aligned with that because it may not match their values.
Yeah.
So I think for Instagram to keep themselves safe, they just really try to stay away from that. And they don't want promotion of only, you cannot have an OnlyFans link in your bio.
Wow. That is on Instagram.
That's why I made a separate URL.
Oh, right.
That
for sure.
Then like goes to a page. That, yeah.
Like Linktree or whatever the fuck it is. Yeah, absolutely.
Or whatever the fuck it is.
It's literally exactly Linktree. What it is. It's literally like whatever it is.
There's a couple of them. Yeah. So
what is the difference between hardcore and softcore? Like what is the actual dictionary difference?
The dictionary difference is softcore shows like nudity. So it's nudity like breasts, no penetration.
Okay.
Hardcore is like penetration.
Like it's full on, there's no regulations.
Mm-hmm. So you post on OnlyFans and you have grown this huge following doing that. Have you ever considered doing, what's the, like a network?
Studio company,
yeah.
For me, it's not my path, but for guys, I understand why it would make sense, because if you don't have a following, there's no way to promote within the OnlyFans app. So you have to have the social media. So to gain those social media followers, it does make sense for a lot of guys to go to studio porn, because they're getting billions of views on a video, because the way they market it and push it, they don't get paid much.
Oh, no, not nearly as much as what you'd get paid on OnlyFans. Okay. Yeah. But they get the visibility.
They get the visibility, and that's what makes it worth it. But for me, I was able to gain that on my own. So I actually owned my own porn studio. So I have shot studio work, but it was for my own company.
You were the sole person doing it. You were working for somebody. Okay. Yes.
It makes sense that you wouldn't want to do that, though, because your content is private. People have to subscribe to see it. If you do, you know, public porn, and that makes sense why they don't get paid as much, because it's free.
When I owned my studio, so that was like the benefit of it, was it was still behind a paywall, but then the thing was is I had the network of affiliates to push out the content to make sure it gets lots of views, and I would have like ads on different websites. I'd be in the corner, like box, you know what
like
I mean?
Like your face is popping up. Right. Like that's how you get traction.
Exactly. Yeah. So I would get traffic that way, but it ended up just not really working out with my studio, which that was really hard to accept for me.
Right. Something not working out.
I worked years for it, and then it just didn't come to fruition, because I realized that like I didn't offer everything that they want from a studio company, and I just couldn't. It's not the way I do my content. So,
and you're probably
a learning lesson.
You're used to being pretty successful in your ventures, so that was probably like a...
It was a huge hit to my ego.
Yeah.
It totally was. Yeah, I got caught up on it for a long time, and then I went through a dark period, and it was because after the failure of that and then the failure of my relationship, I started telling myself that I was a failure and a loser, and that became my reality, because I started not treating people the way I should. I became self-destructive, because I was like, what does it matter anyways, I'm a loser. So that became my reality. So that's been really hard to get out of that mindset, but something I've done recently, and just think about how lucky I am, you know.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, obviously Madison and you go way back, so I'm just meeting you, but like I feel like you got a really, like, your head screwed on tight, which is cool to hear. And it, like, hear like you talk about where you came from is interesting, because like I don't see that in you now, so whatever you're doing is working.
I mean, what you tell yourself becomes your reality, right? And I'm sure you've learned a lot about that with your experiences. You know, manifestation, the way that you speak to yourself, the way that you speak to the universe, that's what becomes your life.
Yeah
it's really crazy. And like after like working on it and like getting self-esteem and trying to change that negative self-talk, I feel like I'm fucking back. Like things are going really, really well with work right now.
I mean, like you just said, like the way you perceive your life is how your life is going to be. So if you don't feel good and you don't feel happy, it's really easy to just see everything as negative and you attract that energy back.
Yeah. And then also like, if you don't respect yourself, like other people don't respect you.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. You can correct the course of your life just by changing your mindset. Like you don't have to change. People get so overwhelmed. Like they have to change everything in their life in order to have a better life. If you just change the way that you feel about yourself, the way you treat yourself, you said it best. People are going to treat you the way that you treat yourself.
And I feel like this first step is giving yourself grace, you know?
Absolutely.
100%. I think I do struggle with giving myself grace sometimes. And I feel like you do as well. Like some, like we're talking, like she's doing dry January and we're talking about like, oh, well, we just want to have a drink.
Yeah. Like it's impossible.
How has that been going for you? Is that hard?
It's horrible.
Really?
It's been really hard.
Do you go out like every, like what is your drinking
a party schedule? Animal. No. Yeah, no, I don't.
It's more like the casual. Like,
yeah, I don't party anymore. Like, you know, I'm engaged. I'm, you know, an adult. I have a busy career. I don't like go to the bars on the weekends or anything, but like I would have a glass of wine right now. Or, you know, we went to the football. We went and watched football yesterday. Like, I want to have a beer. I didn't realize until I completely quit drinking how much of a casual drinker I actually am. Okay. And so it's just kind of been breaking that. It's a habit. It's a habitual cycle of, do you actually need to have a drink to have a good time?
Right.
And dry January has really made me realize, no, you don't. I am perfectly fine in these situations not having a drink. I just tell myself that I need the drink.
And also sometimes maybe those situations aren't for you.
If you're in a situation where you feel like you need to drink to have fun or to be there, you should not be in that situation anyway.
Right. Yeah, it's not... It's not for you. Why push yourself to be unhealthy?
Especially if you're trying to be sober. And that's something Dry January, I'm sure like the whole fucking continental United States is participating in Dry January or trying. You realize all of these experiences, these situations that I was putting myself in that I thought I wanted to be a part of or I thought I needed to drink, they weren't adding to my life. They were taking away from my life.
Have you found that you've replaced those things that aren't for you anymore with other activities?
I'm the most motivated bitch when I don't drink. Like these last couple of weeks have been, I am in the gym every single day, twice a day. I've gotten multiple contracts this week. My follow-up is so much better. My relationship, not like I have problems, but we just communicate better. I feel better about myself. I have less anxiety. I am on top of my schedule. I go to bed on time. I wake up earlier. I like myself a hell of a lot better when I don't drink.
Yeah, and I think every time you like get back into the cycle of drinking, you tell yourself you want to get out of it. But then for some reason, it's so easy to forget how much better it is to be sober.
You forget in a second. And that's the craziest thing for me is like, I've never really been sober. And I wondered like if I took this past January, if I took it through February, March, how would I feel about alcohol after having actually cut it out of my life? In 6 months, what do I look like? How do I feel about myself? Does it still feel like a habit that I want to partake in, or does it kind of go away? Because for me right now, I'm like, I want to have a drink all the time. And I didn't really think I had a problem with alcohol, but holy shit, Dry January is making me feel like maybe I have a little bit of a dependency on it.
I think society doesn't help because like everything is an occasion to drink. Like literally everywhere you go, everyone you're around, there's always an excuse to have a drink. Even if it's just one drink or two drinks, like it does make you feel like shit the next day. You don't sleep as well. You feel tired the next day.
You're not as motivated.
You're not as motivated. You have anxiety. Like it's just a fact.
Well, and I'm sure you can second that because you're sober and you say that your work has just been exponentially better. Your life has been exponentially better. Do you ever feel like going back?
I do, and it really scares me because the way that where I ended things were just bad. And I'm like, glad I hit rock bottom when I did because I don't want to go on so many more years just surviving. And that's what I was doing. I wasn't really experiencing life and I was just numbing out because I didn't want to feel things. But now I've realized that we have one shot and we're so lucky to even be on this planet that we were the sperm to make it to the egg to make us who we are. And we only have one shot to have a human experience. And I want to feel all of those emotions. I don't want to be numb. It's hard, but I have so many emotions now that I am sober.
Absolutely.
It's scary and it's too much sometimes, but when I do think about going back, I'm like, the only feelings I had were emptiness.
Yeah.
And you can't black it out. Like, it's still going to be there.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I actually saw this about alcohol because, like, so much of my feed is alcohol because I'm doing Dry January now. So it's like,
she knows.
Seriously. I'm like, leave me alone. It's like, you need to get sober. I'm like, fuck. It was like, alcohol is a slow and silent killer because it's not like you drink one time and you're like, oh, that ruined my entire life. Mm-hmm. It is slowly but surely, it takes away, it chips away at who you are as a person, your ability to manage your emotions, your ability to show up at work, and until you absolutely are in rock bottom and the only thing you have left is alcohol. And by that point, you're completely dependent on it. But that's how it happens because it's a slow, slippery slope.
Yeah, and that's where it got me. It was just complete isolation. Then, like you said, all you have is that substance left, and the substance doesn't even make you feel good anymore.
No.
So it's just, for me, I don't know what your relationship with drugs and alcohol is like, but for me, I'm really afraid of going back out there because I don't know if I'll be able to come back from it.
Absolutely.
And I don't want to wake up 2 years down the line and realize I wasted another 2 years. The last 2 years were really difficult for me, and they just flew by. I didn't even realize all the things I was missing out on because I was just caught up in chasing a high and fake happiness.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's fake dopamine. Mm-hmm. And then there's nothing left. And you're like, wow, I have not, like you said, not done anything with these 2 years, 5 years, however long it is. And that's a sad thing. So
and
I think
it's scary because you just wake up and you realize like 2 years went by.
And I don't remember any of it.
I don't remember anything.
Yeah, absolutely.
The fake dopamine. And then God forbid you want any real dopamine and it's just so depleted and it doesn't even feel nearly the same as it used to because you're so used to this artificial dopamine and like you're just so drained that part of the reason why it's so hard to bounce back is because you're like chemically just so fucked after a certain point that any type of real dopamine takes like a year to fully come back to normal, like normal life giving you normal happiness and normal sensations of like peace.
Absolutely. Yeah. But it's amazing that you were able to get out of it and stay out of it and that you're actually done with it. It seems like you are completely done with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's really intimidating to say like not the rest of my life, but like this time really feels much different. And I don't know, just try to think at like one day at a time.
One day at a time.
Of like the rest of your life, because that's too intimidating. But I know I can get through anything for an hour.
Well, and I think
and sometimes that's what it is I'm literally struggling to get through that hour, but I'm like, I can make it through an hour and the cravings will go away after that hour, but it's a hard hour. Yeah. You know what I mean?
But that's all it is. It's an hour.
Anything for
and
an
I
hour.
Think like saying for the rest of your life is intimidating, and it probably deters a lot of people from wanting to like continue down the path because it feels so overwhelming. Mm-hmm. But the longer that you are able to go and push through each hour by hour, the easier it will eventually hopefully be dealing. Like, I made it this far, like I'm not turning back now type of
right. thing. And I think we turn to substances for comfort. So you really need to build a community around you that you are safe with and who understand, because a lot of people don't understand addiction.
Yeah.
So you have to find your people who do understand and support
and
you.
And support you. Mm-hmm. Don't want to drag you back down the rabbit hole, because misery loves company.
Yeah.
And people who are still suffering, struggling in addiction,
they're not going to understand.
They're
going to
pull you
be sober,
right back in with them.
Right. And also some people, they can't see you being sober because it makes them look at their own problems.
Right.
And so they're like, come on, you're fine.
Yeah.
Because
that makes me fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Because then there's actually accountability where they're like, oh, I have to think about
this person.
Maybe I'm the
this
problem.
Isn't normal.
Yeah. This person too. Is getting sober. Like, oh my God, is that something I should be doing? And then it becomes existential. Absolutely.
Okay. Can I just say, if you see a sober person at a party, it's not the end of the world if they don't have a drink in their hand. Ask them once if they want a drink. If someone says no, respect that. What the fuck do you care? You know? So,
yeah, like, don't bombard them with, you should be drinking. Why aren't you drinking?
And then, like, a lot of times people will do that. And then it gets to the point where you have to say, you know, I'm actually sober, so I don't drink. And then it turns into,
like,
is it okay that I'm doing this in front of you? I'm
group?
Like, yeah, I came to a party. I knew. You
Why
know
are we
what
making
mean?
A thing out of this?
Yeah, I think it's different. Like, if you're all just going to hang out, like, oh, hey, like, how are you doing with that? Like, checking in. That's nice. But someone at a party being like, are you sure? Are you sure? You're like, stop making this a big deal in front of everybody because it's humiliating.
Like, just mind your own fucking business.
And then you have
don't do it.
Then you have to say, well, I'm actually sober. And then it's like, oh, why? What happened?
Or it's like, you have a problem.
Yeah, I know.
Like, no, so, I think you're the one with the problem.
And that's exactly the issue, is like, people are intimidated by sobriety because it's such a social pressure. Because
it puts a
to
mirror
drink.
In front of them as well.
And why do you need me to have a drink in my hand?
Yeah.
How the
to
fuck
make
does
it okay
affect
for you?
You
to have another one, you know?
Yeah. It's like that person that's always like, yeah, have another one, have another shot. Like, let's get fucking drunk. Like, how about you get drunk?
Yeah,
like, go. No one's telling you not to take another
It's funny. Shot. I'm acting like I haven't been that person. But not to somebody who doesn't drink.
Yeah.
Like, if somebody's not drinking, I'm not like, are you sure?
Honestly, like, when I was getting really fucked up and I was at raves or whatever, when people would tell me that they were sober, I was like, whoa, I wish I felt comfortable enough to do that.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's honestly impressive. Being sober is not embarrassing. It is extremely impressive.
But
impressive.
It is embarrassing when you're at a party and someone's like, makes you say it. You know, if it gets to that point.
I can see that. So. That's why everyone should just mind their own fucking business.
That's right.
That's the point of this podcast. Mind your own fucking
business.
That's
the whole point of the podcast.
Well, on that note, thank you so much for coming. We're so grateful. Someone with so many followers graced us with their presence.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so good to see you. Like, honestly, even before we were setting up, it was just like a nice blast from the past, and I'm so glad to see you guys doing well, and you're killing
it
on the pod. I love the little clips, so I can't wait to see the ones from this.
Thank you
for joining us.
Thank you so much. Like, it's been an honor.
Thank you guys.
And Bad Therapy, tune in, because we are going to be doing some special guests. That's going to be our new MO for the year. We don't have another special guest for 6 months.
We don't have literally anybody lined up, but
we're working on it. So thank Stay you so tuned. Much. And
thank you for letting me be your first. I'm honored.
Yes.
You're my first baby.
And cheers to that.
Let's get food.
Let's eat. I'm fucking starving.